net.
With the New York Times in one hand and the Catechism of the Catholic Church in the other, Al Cresta is ready for conversations of consequence.
It's not about being politically correct. It was being biblically correct.
Good time.
I know from some of the things that Senator Spector said to me over the weeks, I know how hard he's agonized. I believe he's going to be happier.
I think we're seeing a war brewing in the Republican Party right now.
It can only be attributable to human error.
Broadcasting from the studios of Ave Maria Radio in Ann Arbor, Michigan, and taking a closer Catholic look at current events, issues, and ideas. This is Cresta in the Afternoon.
That homophobe Antonin Scalia has got too many votes on this court.
Insanity runs in my family.
It's understanding that makes it possible for people like us to tolerate a person like yourself.
Behold, I send you out as sheep amidst the wolves.
Good afternoon. I'm Al Cresta, thanking you for being with me. We've got another 2 hours talking about the things that matter most. I want to remind you again, get on over there to crestaintheafternoon.blogspot.com, where we have the daily program schedules in advance. We also have live webcam of the broadcast, also podcasting, downloadable MP3s, and, of course, blogging on the things that matter most each and every day. Easy to get to, Cresta in the Afternoon. .blogspot.com. So get it on there. Let's hear from you. Also, coming up today, we'll be talking to Heidi Sierras. She's been preparing for it for more than a year, and then 2 weeks ago it happened. Baptized by Pope Benedict XVI in St. Peter's Basilica in Rome. Then followed by confirmation and first Eucharist, she became a new member of the Catholic Church. And she'll be sharing her experience with us in just a few minutes. Also, Dr. Rudolph Alvarado has written with the award-winning and compelling biography of Joe Hernandez, a Catholic Mexican-American who, despite his ethnic background, became thoroughbred horse racing's greatest race caller at a time when most American Mexicans were being repatriated during the Great Depression. So Rudy's going to join us, and we'll talk over the story. We'll listen to some of Joe Hernandez's calls, and it's really a fascinating story. That's coming up in this hour as well. And then in the last hour of the program, we open the phone lines, come direct to my desk. We do the conversation, 1-877-573-7825. 1-877-573-7825. America Magazine, a Jesuit publication, making the case for the relaxing of the celibacy rule. And also, we have a few things, some new things to talk about regarding Notre Dame and a rumor that's being circulated surrounding Father Jenkins. We'll get to that coming up in the last hour of the program. Also, the claim that the current recession is racist. Seasonally adjusted U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics unemployment numbers show that blacks have an unemployment rate of 13.3% compared to 7.9% for blacks, and for black men over 19 years of age, it's even worse. Is it significant? I mean, it's obviously at a personal level significant if you don't have a job. The question is, what does this tell us about race in America? High black unemployment has more to do with lags, I think, in educational attainment and skill rather than with racism per se. But it's worth discussing. It's an old, vexing, and some say intractable problem. I don't think it's intractable. But I think you can't see this problem resolved until we begin discussing with some candor what the problems really are. That's coming up in the last hour of the program. Plus, you set the agenda at 1-877-573-7825. How about in the headlines right now with Nick Tom?
Thank you, Alan. A very good afternoon, everyone. This is your Ave Maria Radio News on Wednesday, April 29th. The saint of the day is Catherine of Siena. Twin car bombings in a Baghdad market killed at least 17 people today. Some four dozen others were injured in the blasts, which came after last week's arrest of an al-Qaeda-linked group's leader. A third car was rigged to explode in the Sadr City area of the Iraqi capital, but authorities managed to defuse that device. Pennsylvania Senator Arlen Specter says the Republican Party has become too conservative for his taste, and he's jumped over to the Democrats. Specter was joined by President Obama and Vice President Biden in Washington for a news conference, making the move official this morning. Specter says as the GOP knows he votes his own conscience and is not going to kowtow to party lines.
I have represented the people of Pennsylvania, and I will continue to do just that. As I said yesterday, I will not be an automatic 60th vote.
The senator says he looks forward to seeking re-election as a Democrat. His defection from the GOP puts Democrats one vote away from the magic 60-seat mark that makes the Senate immune from Republican filibusters. Legislation that would create a new class of crimes based on victims' actual or perceived sexual orientation or gender identity may be voted on today in the U.S. House of Representatives. Groups like Focus on the Family have issued warnings about federal hate crimes legislation for years. These groups warn that those who may speak negatively about homosexuality could face prosecution for inciting violence against gay individuals. And stamps honoring Pope Benedict XVI's four-day pilgrimage to the Holy Land will be issued by Israel. Ecumenical News International reports the stamps will be part of a special series featuring churches and images of other Christian holy sites in Israel. Pope Benedict will arrive in Israel on May 11th for what will be his first visit to the Holy Land as leader of the Catholic Church. And now your fascinating fact for the day. This isn't the first time that Arlen Specter has switched parties. In 1966, Arlen Specter left the Democrats to be a Republican. Reporting for Ave Maria Radio News, I'm Nick Tom.
Good afternoon to you. I'm Al Cresta. Joining me right now, Heidi Sierras, was selected to represent North America and was baptized, confirmed, and received First Communion from Pope Benedict XVI at Easter Vigil 2 weeks ago in Rome. Heidi, good to have you with me.
Hello, Al. It's good to be here.
What was your particular spiritual background? How were you raised?
I actually didn't really have a religious upbringing. My parents are divorced, and we lived with my mom, and she took us to some churches that she was invited to from her, with her friends would invite her to some churches. So we got introduced to the idea of God and that type of thing, but we weren't really religious. We didn't go to church on a regular basis. But growing up, I knew that I believed in that there was a God, mm-hmm. just never really went further than that.
Yeah.
And then when I got married to my husband, he's a cradle Catholic.
Mm-hmm.
And I had attended Mass with him several times, and I started asking a lot of questions about it. And he was able to answer most of my questions, mm-hmm. but he finally got to the point where he was like, why don't you go to RCIA and they will be able to answer your questions? And so I did, and I just fell in love with the Catholic Church. I absolutely fell in love with it.
So you had a very good experience then in RCIA?
Yeah. Yes, mm-hmm. I did. Yes.
And so it was over a period of, when were you married?
We were married in 1997.
Okay, so you've been married a while now.
Yeah.
And you were received into the church just 2 weeks ago. As one who believed in God but wasn't, committed to any particular Christian tradition,
yeah.
How did you look upon Catholicism? Did it seem odd, exotic, a little insular? How did it strike you?
In the beginning, I did have some issues, I guess you could call them, with the Catholic Church. For one thing, society teaches you that birth control is okay.
Sure.
And so when my husband and I got married, I was on birth control. My husband really struggled with that because he knew it was against his faith, but I was like, well, I'm going to do what I want. You
yeah,
know?
Sure.
So that I did have some issues. And one thing I did struggle with in the beginning was Jesus being present in the Eucharist. I felt if Jesus was truly present in the Eucharist, wouldn't you feel that? Wouldn't you sense that?
Yeah, yeah.
And it was actually my sister that made me realize that he truly is present in the Eucharist, because my sister came with us for one of my children's, it was either baptism or First Communion, I can't remember which. And she said that every time she goes into a Catholic church, she says that if she has this feeling like somebody died. You know, even she, who's not religious at all, can sense a presence there.
Hmm.
And so that kind of, like, even she can sense that. I just wasn't open to it.
Yeah.
And once she said those words, I was like, there really, truly is a presence. And when you walk into a Catholic church, there is.
Yeah.
There is a presence there.
I agree. I mean, I was away from the Catholic Church for a long, long time. But I always sensed that there was something special going on there.
Exactly.
Even if I couldn't explain it. Now, so you had, let's see, so you issue of artificial contraception, that was an issue for you.
Yeah.
The nature of the Eucharist, and was it real? That was an issue. What else did you have to deal with?
I think those were the two main things.
Okay.
I know some people have, you know, the issue with the devotion to Mary,
mm-hmm.
and that really wasn't a problem for me. That made total sense,
yeah.
that you would honor Mary as Jesus' mother. You would just honor her. I didn't have any... those were the two main issues. And I wasn't aware of natural family planning. I didn't know it existed. And once we learned more about it, I thought it was... I now want to look into teaching it. I don't know if that's going to be, I'm going to be able to do that, but I'm looking into that.
Yeah, well, good.
Because it's such a wonderful thing. It's been a blessing for my family, my husband, my family, yeah.
Now, how did you end up being selected to represent North America?
Wilma, who's my sponsor, she has traveled to Rome several times, and she's Filipino. Everywhere she goes, she tends to meet all the Filipinos. And she met a Filipino nun there, and this nun works for the Vatican, or at the time she did. She answered the phones, and she was having lunch with her, and in their conversation that got brought up, the fact that the Pope baptizes, I think he usually baptizes seven. At least last year it was seven. This year it was only five. And so she asked, well, how do you go about getting selected for that? And she told her what she needed to do, and there's some legalities to it. You have to have a letter from your bishop, a letter from the pastor of your parish, and you have to select somebody, and that person has to submit their birth certificate, marriage license. There's, you know, and so she came, when she got back, she told our Father Ilo, who's the pastor of our parish, about this opportunity, and he said, well, you have to pick somebody, and I'm not sure why they picked me. I know one of the requirements is you have to be in the RCIA program for 2 years, and I had already been in the program for a year and a half, so I don't know if that's what was the deciding factor mm-hmm. or not, but they chose me, and yeah. I couldn't say no to that.
Well, I don't blame you. It must have been, I mean, you tell me, what was it like? I mean, it seemed like obviously the spiritual material here is strong, but
yeah.
the whole sense of pageantry and being raised in and around the world to do this. I mean, were you able to enjoy it?
I was. We were there for 11 days.
Okay, so you did have some time.
Yeah, so we were able to do a lot of sightseeing and visit a lot of the... I was able to go to the four main basilicas,
mm-hmm.
of course, St. Peter's, St. John Lateran, St. Mary Major, and Paul Outside the Walls.
Mm-hmm.
And I got to go into the catacombs. I got to go on the Scala Santa, which is the steps that Jesus walked on. They were brought over from by St. Helena. And we also got to go on the Scavi tour, which
yes,
you could
yes.
see the bones of St. Peter's, which mm-hmm. was, I mean, I had no doubts before I went to Rome that I wanted to be Catholic, but that just solidifies it. You just being there, like being in the catacombs too, you know that a lot of those that were buried in these catacombs, a lot of them had Christian symbols on their mm-hmm. their tombs, and so you know they were martyred.
Yeah.
Or, I mean, you know, a lot of these Christians were most likely martyred. And so just to be in there, and we actually got to celebrate Mass down in the catacombs, which not everybody's able to do that. Mm-hmm. So that was really neat.
My wife visited Rome on a pilgrimage back in 1994 or so, and she hasn't been the same since. I mean, it has an impact on people's lives. She also went to the Holy Land at the same pilgrimage, but it's had a profound and lasting impact on her. And I hear that many times from people who have had the opportunity to spend some time there. Now, what was the Easter Vigil like?
Easter Vigil was a little bit, I was extremely nervous beforehand. I had to be at St. Peter's at 9 a.m. that morning for rehearsal.
Oh.
We had rehearsal in the morning, which was a little difficult because the person that was teaching us or showing us how to go about doing things was speaking Italian and he didn't speak very good English.
He
would have to kind of physically move me, and, you know, to where I needed to stand, and you know, he's kind of playing charades to show me how to do things. But we got through it, and right before the Easter Vigil, we had one more practice, so that made me feel a little bit better. And I was really nervous going up to be baptized, and once I saw the Pope and. I've heard this said before, that when you look into the eyes of the Pope, it's like you're looking into the eyes of Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
And I never knew if that was really the case or not, but he does have a tremendous, when he looks into your eyes, it's very profound.
Yeah. And he baptized you.
And he baptized me. And after that, I was no longer nervous. I thought I was going to be bawling the whole time. I thought I was going to be this emotional wreck.
Yes.
But I really wasn't. I was so calm. I was not nervous after.
Grace made you strong.
When you visit Our Lady of Grace bookstore inside Domino's Farms, it's not 101 Bibles with different colors and published only by Gutenberg. It's books published by Tan, Servant, and Ignatius. There are new books like Father Benedict Groeschel's Tears of God, who can write firsthand on persevering in the face of great sorrow and catastrophe. There are self-help books like Virtues for Men, A Guy's Guide to the Good Life. And there's cookbooks like Father Leo Paddlinghug's Grace Before Meals that incorporates great recipes with godly conversation and reflection during preparation. Our Lady of Grace bookstores has DVDs, like the inspirational Fireproof for Adults and Veggie Tales for the Kids. Those ideas, plus Holy Art for the Home, children's Bibles, icons, rosaries, and crucifixes, is what Our Lady of Grace bookstore is known for having all year round. Make an Easter season visit to Our Lady of Grace bookstore at Lobby C of Domino's Farms. Call 734-930-3747. That's Our Lady of Grace bookstore, 734-930-3747.
Christopher Minnis, thoughts on making every day count. I'm Frank Sweeney.
When a woman is diagnosed with breast cancer, it's a terrifying experience. For a passionate athlete like Betsy Carter, losing her physical confidence was truly a big problem. Then the arrival of a furry friend gave her a sense of much-needed normalcy. Lucy, a Tibetan terrier puppy, didn't see Carter as bald or disfigured, but as a source of love and attention. Betsy eventually regained her physical abilities. She attributes her recovery to the relationship she had with Lucy in helping to find a wholeness that seemed to be lacking in the recovery process. You see, my friend, healing love can take many, many forms.
This message was brought to you by The Christophers. Thanks for listening, and remember that it's better to light one candle than curse the darkness.
Good afternoon, I'm Al Cresta, and it's my great pleasure to be joined right now by Dr. Rudolph Alvarado. He's the author of The Untold Story of Joe Hernandez, The Voice of Santa Anita. Rudy is an award-winning author, a horse racing expert, and we talked just last week, and you had just won the...
Dr. Tony Ryan.
In Lexington.
In Lexington, the book award there.
You won number one in that prestigious category, and that prestigious award, which is for books about thoroughbred horse racing.
Right.
That's like a Pulitzer Prize in this field.
It is. It is, absolutely. The award goes to the best book published about any aspect regarding thoroughbred horse racing. And I've been telling anybody that'll listen that one of the finalists for the award was a Dick Francis, who, is, of course, is the internationally known novelist who writes mysteries about the track. And his particular book that was up for the award was called Silks. So I was very excited to be named the winner, and I was there in person to receive the award. So it's a very exciting time.
And since we talked, I just found out you're the finalist for the Eric Hoffer Award.
That's correct.
I hadn't thought of Eric Hoffer in a while. I remember the old dock worker,
Longshoreman,
1960s,
self-educated.
Yeah,
eventually
wrote the book True Believer.
Correct. And I just found out a couple of days ago that my book was named a finalist for that award as well for social relevant writing. So I was very excited that the people are starting to realize, and some have realized that. The Joe Hernandez book is more than just a book about a race caller. It's about an American individual who really, you know, was challenged by the society in which he lived, overcame a number of obstacles to achieve what he did in his time. So.
Well, let's let people hear his voice.
Very good.
Because when we think of horse racing,
mm-hmm.
and we think of the announcer.
Correct.
We think of Joe Hernandez.
We do.
Even
if we don't know it, we do.
Right.
He is a quintessential caller.
Let's try cut two, which he calls the Rosemont defeating Seabiscuit in the 1937 handicap.
The handicap was probably the race that Joe looked forward to most each year. After all, at its inauguration in 1935, it was the world's richest, and it gave him one of his biggest thrills to call Seabiscuit's comeback win in 1940. And it was a great victory for the Biscuit because he had lost in two previous tries at the big prize, 1937 and 38, and had been forced out of action in 1939 because of injury. First, here's 1937.
Out the far turn, it's Special Agent in front by a length and one half, Boxthorn is second by a neck. Don Roberto is third by a head. Seabiscuit is fourth on the outside by 2.5 lengths. And Rosemont is coming up on the inside. Turning for home, it's Special Agent in front by 1 length. Seabiscuit is second, the length and 1/2. Don Roberto is third by 3/4 of a length. Indian Broom is fourth, and Rosemont is fifth. Here comes Time Supply. End of the stretch. It's Seabiscuit on the outside by a head. Special Agent is second by 3/4 of a length. Indian Broom is third. And Rosemont is fourth. And it's going to be a driving finish between Seabiscuit and Rosemont. And they're going across the line to finish now. Rosemont and with it.
Well, there you go. That is the voice of Joe Hernandez, the voice of Santa Anita. Some people in their work, their career, they become the icon of
that profession,
field.
That industry, yeah, yeah, that field. Mm-hmm. And Joe Hernandez is certainly that in thoroughbred horse race quality.
He was on the West Coast starting in the early 30s. He was the voice of thoroughbred horse racing all over the West Coast. And as you find out in the book, he was also the voice of Pimlico and Belmont in the late 30s. He was the first race caller at Pimlico and Belmont, so not only was his name an icon and an established name on the West Coast, but also on the East Coast as well.
Yeah.
Alfred Vanderbilt took him from Santa Anita and actually tried to get him to sign to just call the races there, and they couldn't work out a contract. And but from there, Joe also called the 1950 Kentucky Derby as well, there at the track. So he was the voice of the Kentucky Derby for that particular year. And, of course, they wanted him to stay after that, and when they couldn't work out a contract, he went back to the West Coast. But again, yes, he was certainly a very recognizable voice at a time when millions of people paid attention to the races.
Mexican-American. So, you know, in the world of broadcasting, you know, he's coming up at a time when people are expecting Anglo baritones on the radio.
They were, and that was the element of the story really that drew me there from the outset when I was reading Laura Hillenbrand's Seabiscuit, an American legend, and came across Joe's name. And was intrigued how a Latino, a Mexican-American, could achieve such success at a time when most Mexican-Americans were struggling to survive the Great Depression, and, of course, most of them were being repatriated out of the country.
Yeah.
So I was very intrigued by what was special, what was unique about that Joe Hernandez experience that had allowed him to achieve when others were struggling to do so.
Where was he born?
What year?
When? Or, excuse me, where?
Where? Well, that was a five-year odyssey for me, and I was joined on that journey by Father Frank Hernandez, who was Joe's son. And after 5 years, I discovered, uncovered, that Joe was born in a little mining village in 1909, and the name of the village was called Metcalf, Arizona. Mm-hmm. It was a little copper mining village that when Joe returned there after he called his first big cap in 1935, after that racing season was finished, he himself wanted to go back and rediscover where it was that his roots lay, because he had to leave there, as you discover through the book. He had to leave there at a fairly young age because his father passes away, and then his mother passes away, and he's left an orphan, and he's given away, and he's adopted, given away because nobody else will really take him.
Wow.
And he ends up surfacing in 1921 in San Diego, California, of all places. And,
how old?
He was about 13, 12 years old when he surfaced in San Diego. And again, the irony, as I started out my story trying to find Father Frank Hernandez, is I called Catholic Answers in San Diego to ask them if they could please help me. So the irony, of course, is there. But through this entire process, I've discovered that the Lord had a hand in making sure that I was at the right place at the right time. Because, again, as you discover in the book, the way that I found out where Joe was born and when he was born was I actually met a 97-year-old little old lady, a little Mexican lady there in Metcalf, and actually had a chance to talk to her in Phoenix. But she was from Metcalf, and Father Frank and I had a chance to meet and to talk to her. And she told us, yes, that she knew exactly when Joe was born, and she gave me the date, June 3rd, 1909, there in Metcalf. And when I asked her, how did she know this, she said because she was born in the morning of that day, and Joe was born in the afternoon of that same day.
Wow.
And again, I wanted to find that so badly for Father Frank, I think more than anybody else in the whole world. Even if the book hadn't been published, I was satisfied that that was one of my main goals that I wanted to accomplish in undertaking the researching of this book. And
was he surprised? Was Father Frank surprised by that?
Oh, we were both floored, and he started to cry. As you discover in the book, the first conversation that we had about this was over the phone, and Father Frank and I were sitting in a little diner in Metcalf, And when I talked to the daughter, and she said, well, my mom is sitting right here, and I asked her these questions, and she revealed that to me. And I cupped the phone that I was on, and I said, Father, we found him. We finally found him.
Wow.
And he started to choke up and cry, and got up, and we hugged because it had been such a long journey for the both of us. And then we rushed into the quiet of another room outside of the little restaurant we were eating our dinner at, and made arrangements to meet with Fortunata the next day in Phoenix. And again, what is so unique about that is, again, the name Fortunata was her name, the fortunate one, you know, to the very, you know, and so again, as I look back on it and reflect, and pray through the different channels there, I, you know, praise the Lord, thank the Lord that we found it and that we were able to accomplish. I was able to accomplish that for Father Frank.
Last time we talked, you mentioned that this was especially important to him because he had grown up thinking he was the biological son of another.
Right. When, you know, part of the intriguing aspect that people are discovering about this particular story, the Joe Hernandez story, is that what I discovered is that Joe created this fictional life for himself. He was that that Alger, that Horatio Alger character, the American dream, you know, come alive and doing well. And Joe changed his personal narrative to fit that particular story. And so anything that he thought would take away from that narrative, he hid away from others. So whenever he was talking to the press, he would tell the press that he was from San Francisco. He had told others that he was from Missouri. He told people that the mother of his son and his daughter was Patsy, who was his second wife, a beautiful blonde-haired, blue-eyed American. But that wasn't the case. Their mother was a Mexican-American girl that, again, was born and raised in Coronado, which is right outside of San Diego, California. And they were married at an early age. And so, again, what you discover is that, you know, I think Joe was very careful about the image that he wanted others to have of him.
Yeah.
And so when we start to talk about the social relevancy of the book, I think that that's where it starts to connect to that social relevance. And I received an email early on one time from a young man in Arizona that wrote me, and he said, you know, I'm glad that we don't live in a society where we have to hide where we're from anymore. And it raised a number of questions in me, and I was wondering, is that really the case? Is that really the case? Have we really come that
It'll
far?
It might change for some people. There will always be places where we will not want to admit we've been.
Correct.
We're products of, and it'll just change based on what happens within the general society, I think.
Correct. Yeah. And it just speaks back to the fact that we're all human, and that when we're faced with those choices, like so many of us are, to then step up and say, well, yeah, here's my story, and I'm going to stick to it.
Now, Joe Hernandez was Catholic.
He was devout Catholic,
committed Catholic, and devout. Not a perfect man, as you've already pointed out. His son, Frank, though, went on to priesthood.
He did. He's a Jesuit priest.
Still alive.
He's still alive, about 78 now. He lives in Sacramento, where he taught for over 25 years at a Jesuit high school there in Sacramento, an all-boys Jesuit school. He was a pioneer in computer education. So, again, a very active individual who was there for, you know, over 50-some-odd years, just like his dad stuck with his race calling. You know, Father Frank was the same way. But, again, when I went into this research, again, one of the very interesting aspects that I started to find is that almost all of the heads of these various race tracks, whether we're talking about Santa Anita, Tanforan, Bay Meadows, all of the founders of those tracks were devout Catholic men.
That's interesting. Well, why is that the case?
Well, I think it works on a number of different levels. One is they were just that. They were devout Catholics. They were committed to the faith. And in each case, whenever they passed away, they had my mom used to call, used to say a full Catholic mass, a full Catholic burial. You mm-hmm. do the rosary the day before the funeral and mm-hmm. so on, et cetera. So she would call it, a full Latino Catholic mass for your burial. But all of these individuals would go through that rite and have that the rosary, and then the next day they would be buried, and they would also contribute thousands upon thousands of dollars to different charities in their particular areas, in their particular regions. So there's case after case where Santa Anita would open 2 weeks before the season would actually start officially, and the gate for those 2 weeks would be given to charities.
I see.
Right. Yep. And at the same time, though, they would also, they wanted, I think, also to make sure that the community knew. Because, again, we're talking about the 30s. We're talking a very, moralized, deeply moral society. And so there again, if those around you saw that you were committed to your faith, again, they were more willing to support you.
Yeah. And Cultures didn't have any prohibition against betting.
No, because again,
in moderation. I mean, a similar attitude towards alcohol.
Exactly. And what I was going to say is that, again, at the tracks, there wasn't alcohol for sale at tracks. Men were expected to wear nice suits, a nice tie, a hat, and ladies, again, were expected to wear the attire of the day. Yeah.
So that's fascinating.
It is. It is. It ties back to this story of again, that social relevancy that we've been talking about.
Wow. Rudy, hold us there. We'll come back and continue. Dr. Rudolph Alvarado is my guest. The Untold Story of Joe Hernandez, the voice of Santa Anita. Well, I'll tell you, we'll come back. We'll listen to another clip on the other side of the break. It's a fascinating story. We'll play some of Joe's famous calls and get the story of Joe's last call as well. Again, my guest is Dr. Rudolph Alvarado. You can join us with any comments or questions, too, at 1-877-573-7825. You enjoyed the Seabiscuit?
I'm sorry?
Did you enjoy Seabiscuit?
Oh, I did.
Yeah.
Yeah,
me too. 1-877-573-7825.
The Ave Maria Communications Guild invites you to activate your faith. Don't miss the 14th annual Our Lady of Good Counsel Crusader Shootout Golf Outing, Saturday, May 2nd, at Fox Hills Golf Club in Plymouth. Funds raised will support the OLGC Parish Athletic Department. The day includes range balls, lunch, cart, dinner, silent, and live auctions. To register, call 734-420-2077. Catholic recording artist John Michael Talbot will be performing Saturday, May 2nd at St. Joseph Church in Dexter. Tickets are $15 in advance and $20 at the door. St. Joseph will also be offering tours of their newly renovated church earlier the same afternoon. Call 734-426-8483, extension 213 for further details. You can find many more events at our website, AveMariaRadio.net. To become a member of the Guild, call 877-288-1077.
Treatment with Hope.
This is a special commentary from the Susan B. Anthony List, named for the suffragette who was proudly pro-life.
When Texas teenager Laura Dominguez hit an oil spill and lost control of her car, she was paralyzed from the neck down. Doctors told her she would never walk again. Yet, new treatment using Laura's own stem cells have brought healing and hope. She now has upper body movement and walks with the help of braces. She is determined to walk soon with no outside aid. Laura's story, like so many others, illustrates the promise of treatment using adult stem cells. Embryonic stem cells, by comparison, are not only the immoral taking of a human life, but have offered no clinically proven results.
This is Marjorie Dannenfelser, president of the Susan B. Anthony List. To join us in our battle for life, visit our website at sba-list.org.
to you. My guest is Dr. Rolf Alvarado. The Untold Story of Joe Hernandez, The Voice of Santa Anita, his award-winning book, taking the Tony Ryan Award and now a finalist for the Eric Hoffer Award, and I suspect more to come. The book also includes an audio CD of Joe Hernandez's famous calls, plus Joe's last call, which we'll tell you about, an incredible story. Book is available at www.voiceofsantaanita.com. voiceofsantaanita.com. Retail $21.47, but you can get a signed copy $24.47. And if you, those of you who enjoyed the book Seabiscuit, you'll enjoy this book by Rudy Alvarado. Our number here is 1-877-573-7825. That's 1-877-573-7825. Proud that his son became a priest?
He was very proud. He was very proud at the very beginning.
Did it surprise him?
It did. It did. We were, Father Frank and I were sitting in a hotel room. We traveled all over the country researching this book together, and I had the privilege again to meet a number of Jesuits along my journey because we would stay in Jesuit houses as we traveled from L.A. to Arizona and different places. So again, but he related to me the story of when he disclosed that to his father and said that Joe was saddened for just a couple of minutes because he felt, Father Frank felt, that his dad always wanted him to go into one of the family businesses. And so again, if you've read when you get into the book, and again, when I was researching it, I thought it was going to be a simple story about a race caller. But what you start to find out is that Joe was a bloodstock agent. He was an actor. If you've ever seen the Marx Brothers, A Day at the Races, if you haven't watched that in a while, pick it up, listen to especially the very end of that movie when you hear the race caller at the very back kind of carrying the movie there for a while. That's Joe Hernandez's voice that you hear there. Also, if you find the Shirley Temple Seabiscuit story, I believe it's called The Story of Seabiscuit, starring Shirley Temple. Most of the movie is fictitious, as we find out, but you can also see Joe there in living black and white, living color as well. Yeah, again, his voice, he was an actor. He was in Beverly Hillbillies, back when, because again, racing was big. I Love Lucy, he was a cameo on that. So he did a number of roles, the Munsters and so on comes to mind. But yeah, so again, he was an actor. He wrote music as well. He wrote a song that was called Santa Anita Moonlight, and that was actually recorded in New York, in Australia. He was an innovator in terms of TV programs, radio programs that involved racing one way or another. So again, I thought I was going to write a simple little story about a race caller.
Yeah, that's right. Single facet, this is what
right.
he does.
And again, it started to blossom into this fascinating story that then again I had to figure out how to put together.
He liked Seabiscuit.
Yes, he did. He loved Seabiscuit. I mean, he thought that Seabiscuit was going to be the one time champion horse that only comes around once a lifetime. And for his generation, that was very true.
Joe started Christmas Day of what, 32 or 35?
34 at Santa
Christmas
Anita.
Day of 34. He started at Santa Anita.
Right.
Of course, the 30s. That was the peak for Seabiscuit, right?
It was, especially the late 30s. Yeah. The late 30s. He ran his last race in 1940 when he won the Santa Anita Handicap. And, of course, he had been hurt the year before that, and everybody had counted him out except for Joe.
Mm-hmm.
Joe was one of those individuals that said, Seabiscuit is just, he'll be there when the time is right. And sure enough, just like America wanted, he was there.
Let's go ahead and hear cut three. This is the 1940 Handicap, the Seabiscuit comeback victory called by Joe Hernandez.
Seabiscuit's final and successful try came in 1940.
There they go. Ed Specify going to the front, winning call on the rail at second. Witchy is third. Seabiscuit on the outside is fourth. Don Mike at fifth. And Royal Crusader coming down the stretch the first time. It's Witchy in front between Specify and Seabiscuit. Seabiscuit on the outside is second by a neck. Specify on the rail is third by a neck. Royal Crusader on the outside is fourth by a half a length. Winning call is fifth by 2.5 lengths. And Don Mike. Mike County is next. And Ra into the back stretch is Witchy in front by one length. Royal Crusader is second by a head. Seabiscuit is third. By a head, winning call is fourth. On the extreme outside by three lengths. Specify is fifth by length and one half, and by county is sixth. Around the far turn, it's Witch Sea going to a drive by three quarters of a length. Seabiscuit is second. By a head, winning call is third, and then can't wait. They're turning for home now with the winning call in front on the outside. By a head, Kayak is second. By a head, Seabiscuit is third. By one length, and by county. Into the stretch, it's Seabiscuit in front. By a head, Kayak on the outside is second. It's Kayak and Seabiscuit, head and head. It's Seabiscuit on the rail. Seabiscuit and Kayak. Seabiscuit and Kayak. They're coming down there, and Seabiscuit. Seabiscuit wins it. A new world champion comes down, and he wins it. And listen to the crowd. Paul Ben himself. Seabiscuit by two. Kayak is second by one. Whitney was third by length and one half. Winning call was fourth. And listen to the crowd roar. 78,000 fans were absolutely crazy, including your announcer. And he broke the track record. It's up there. Mind you, 11 months away from the race, and here he is. Returning a victor, a champion, really, a miracle horse made by a miracle man of racing, trainer Tom Smith. And you could hear the crowd roar.
Something else.
He was invested.
He was. And it's such a telltale sign. I mean, his love and admiration for Seabiscuit and Silent Tom Smith, he just couldn't hold himself back. And that's what makes that call so unique in the annals of sports history, really, is that he allowed his emotions to get the best of him, especially there at the very end. And it was very rare that Joe Hernandez allowed himself to go there. And when I was talking to his stepdaughter, and she was telling, she was a young girl when this happened, and she said, when Joe made it home that night, he was just grinning and smiling from ear to ear, and said to everybody in the room that I told you Seabiscuit would do it. I told you that he would do it, and he did it. there'll never be another one like him. So.
He was the Iron Man. Of horse race calling.
Yes, he was compared to Lou Gehrig.
Lou Gehrig, and now it's Cal Ripken today. How many races did he call?
In total, he called 15,587 races in a row. And again, that was one of those aspects of the Joe Hernandez story that when I started to research it, again, was one of those elements that, again, was totally unexpected and such a, such a compelling story that I knew this book had to be written, and it had to be shared, and it had to be read. And he started in 1934, Christmas Day 1934, at Santa Anita. And he called the races all those number of years, and his final call came on January 27th of 1972, when that streak finally came to an end.
And that is, tell us what happened. I mean, that's an amazing story, because the story.
That's where I depart in the telling of my story, is I actually pick up with that particular day when that streak came to an end, because that was where Joe's legend was born. And what was, again, so ironic about that is that in that particular season of 1972, Santa Anita, their campaign slogan was, "Good times mean great tradition." And so in all of their advertising for that particular year, they were featuring the legendary calls of Joe Hernandez, the Seabiscuit, the Johnny Longdon, the Kayak, the Stagehand Victory, and the Big Cap, the Round Table, again, another horse that Joe discovered when he was a bloodstock agent. But that particular season, that was what the campaign was centered around, was great times mean great tradition, Santa Anita. So they were using all these great calls that Joe had made to sell the season. Well, Joe had some horses at Hollywood Park. He brought horses in from Chile, and they were there. And so he went to go and check on them that morning. As he was walking to his barn, he passed a young girl that was walking a pony. And being personable, he stopped and said good morning and so on. And as they were talking, the horse kicked him with the hind in the gut and sent him reeling back. And again, what was unexpected in that story is that the first person that saw this happen to Joe was a man by the name of Lanny Leininger. He was a steward there at Hollywood Park. What was ironic about that is that Lanny Leininger was the man who had introduced a teenage Joe Hernandez to the horse races at Agua Caliente in San Diego. Yes. Huh. And it just so happened that Lanny Leininger was walking by when all of this happened. And they all run over to see if Joe's okay. Joe was out for, you know, a minute or so. And when he came to, everybody was saying, you need to get some help. And they said, no. Joe said, no, I'm going to check my horses, and I've got to get to Santa Anita to make my calls for the day. He checked his horses, gets in his car, drives to Santa Anita.
How far a drive was it?
We're talking about 24 miles or so.
Okay.
And he went into the first aid station as soon as he got there, and they were busy. He asked how long it was going to be. He got annoyed and said, you know, he had the races to call. He's not going to sit around and waste time. So then he headed to the booth. He got his lunch, went into the booth, and he started that first call of the day.
Hmm.
And as the horses were going into the back stretch, he fainted at the microphone.
Let's take a listen to this. It's cut 14. Joe's last call.
It's time 12:30. Joe Hernandez at Santa Anita Park. There they go. April Marie is going to the front. Oatman is second. Super Spirit is third. R.C. Quillo is fourth. Running Star is fifth. Getting lucky. Desert Legion on the outside. Around the clubhouse turn. Super Spirit in front by four lengths. Glittering Affair is second. One length on the outside. Desert Legion is third. One length. Oatman is fourth. April Marie. Turning into the backstretch. It's Oatman in front.
Press box. We have the nurse come up to the press box immediately. Okay, it's emergency.
Turning into the stretch, it's April Marie now in front by a half length. Desert Legion closing ground strongly. On the outside is second. Here comes Desert Legion closing ground and on the rail.
We've got
it's April Marie.
Picked up. The game is picked up. Race is picked up. Joe is passed out.
Correct. Yeah.
And we cut a little bit of the silence out of there.
Right.
Just to move it along.
Terry Gilligan, who was a backup announcer who actually did what was called the Oak Tree Meets there at Santa Anita. It was kind of an off-season nonprofit races that they had there. They told him to stand by because people had seen Joe. They'd seen that he wasn't, you know, doing as well as he normally does. And they asked him to stand by just in case they needed him. And so that was him who picked up the call.
Joe was sounding a little tired, a little disengaged. Was that the illness or the age?
No, that was the illness.
Or the
right, being
the
kicked. Being kicked, yeah. I mean, it's very obvious from the word go that
he's not
that
himself.
That he was not gonna be able to finish.
Rudy Holter will come back the other side and let people know where they can get the book and the CD.
April 24th.
7:13 p.m.
As heard only on Ave Maria Radio.
Well, I just got the news, an anonymous donation. It came in, and we have reached the goal for today.
We did.
We did. And
whoa!
So let's write the talk about getting in under the wire. Say thanks. Let's all do. Let's all gather together for a glory be. Okay. Good day. I'm Al Cresta. It was a week of ups and downs and surprises and just hard work, but you came through. We continue our partnership in the new evangelization. Ave Maria Radio's Spring Drive, our 15th membership drive, turned out to be the largest in our history. And I want to thank you for making it so, even in the midst of these difficult times. It's really a miracle.
April 24th.
7:13 p.m.
As heard only on Ave Maria Radio.
Well, I just got the news, an anonymous donation. It came in, and we have reached the goal for today.
We did.
We did. And
whoa!
So let's write the talk about getting in under the wire. Say thanks. Let's all do. Let's all gather together for a glory be. Okay.
Good day. I'm Al Cresta. It was a week of ups and downs and surprises and just hard work, but you came through. We continue our partnership in the new evangelization. Ave Maria Radio's Spring Drive, our 15th membership drive, turned out to be the largest in our history. And I want to thank you for making it so, even in the midst of these difficult times. It's really a miracle. Good afternoon. I'm Al Cresta. With me, Dr. Rudy Alvarado, talking about the great life of Joe Hernandez, the voice of Santa Anita. Again, when we think race calling, we think of his voice. And just a few seconds left, Joe, and we'll have more to say about this in the future. But where can people get the book now?
At www.voiceofsantaanita.com.
Voiceofsantaanita.com, and they can buy the book. They get a signed copy?
They can.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So get on over there. That's voiceofsantaanita.com. Do they all come with the CD?
They do. They all come with with a CD on the back.
And yep. So you'll get a number of Joe Hernandez's most famous calls, and, of course, Joe's last call. What a remarkable story. And it's again one of those stories I would never have known about if I hadn't met you. So thank you so much.
Well, you're more than welcome, because as I told you before, you're a direct line for the inspiration of the book. So there you go.
Thanks, Rudy.
Yeah, thank you.
Again, it's called The Untold Story of Joe Hernandez, the voice of Santa Anita. It's already received the Tony Ryan Award. It's a finalist for the Eric Hoffer Award. And no doubt there will be other awards it will receive this year. I'm Al Cresta. Thanks for being with me.
Would you like a copy of this program? If you miss a part of this program or want to hear it again, Ave Maria programming can be made yours when you order. Just call 734-930-4506. Within a few weeks, you'll receive a copy of this show and any others you want to order on CD. Call 734-930-4506.
Hi, I'm Vanessa Denha-Garmo, editor-in-chief of the Chaldean News. We pray everyone is enjoying a blessed Easter season. In this April issue of the Chaldean News, we focus much of our attention on the refugees. Readers are getting in-depth coverage of the displaced Christians who are seeking refuge all over the world, including in the United States. We also cover the Detroit Chaldean American Chamber of Commerce annual dinner. This year, they honor Johnny Carmo as Businessman of the Year. He's the owner of three upscale markets in Oakland County. And Dr. Nadima Achu is this year's Humanitarian of the Year. Dr. Achu has spent years voicing her concern about the Christians in Iraq. Get your copy of the Chaldean News and learn about this ancient community living in modern times. You can subscribe or advertise today. Join LA Insurance, the CIA, Country Fresh, and Shenandoah Country Club. And you can benefit, too, by reaching the Chaldean community. Log on to www.chaldeannews.com and learn more.
The Ave Maria CD library continues to grow. On our Christ is the Answer program, Father John Ricardo is presenting a series of four talks on prayer. It's Lord, Teach Us to Pray. He addresses the practical steps, praying with Scripture, our Mother Mary, and much more. The four CD box set is $34. Just prior to the election, we featured Voting as a Catholic by Dr. Peter Kreft and The Truth About Stem Cell Research by Right to Life of Michigan's Ed Rivett. The election is passed, but these CDs should be in your library. All editions of Christ in the Afternoon, Catholic Connection, Christ is the Answer, Putting on the Mind of Christ, Dr.